Okay, all right, ladies and gentlemen, boys, girls, good to have you on the First X Minutes podcast, another episode of the First X Minutes podcast. I'm your host. You can find me on Twitter, yes, at Papi_the_great, as at PAPI_the_great. I'll be meeting with Darren Mala. Good to have you. Thank you so much for always listening to the podcast. Make sure you leave a positive review on iTunes and wherever you get your podcast. It's a Sunday. We're recording this on a Sunday. And then, of course, I have a few friends joining me on this episode of the podcast, of course, to talk football, discuss everything that's going on in the of football. And I have to start with long-time friend. His name is Tony. But then again, Tony, this is what we do on the podcast. I'm not the one that's going to introduce you. You will say your name. You will say the club you support. And of course, you will let us know that, man, this club, I hate this club.
Okay.
Asha.
Hi, Papi the Great. I remember I'm so stuck with Ochila. So
memories.
I remember how you used to do it back then. Man, trust me. I always believe. I don't want to say I support Liverpool. I don't want to say I follow Liverpool. Liverpool is my tradition.
Wow.
Liverpool is my tradition. I've been with the club at its lowest. I've been at its. Yes. Yeah, Liverpool is a tradition for me, man. Trust me. I'm not sure what I would want to do without Liverpool, man. I follow the club. When I'm trying to get close to an individual and then I realize they support Manchester United, I lose interest.
Thanks for giving me the chance. Of course, my friend. I mean, we've been together through the Premier League seasons that we had to cramp ourselves in the same viewing center to watch the games, Champions League nights, the arguing in class, the coaching and the playing on the football field. I mean, all the memories are out there. People, if you're wondering, Tony is a very, very good friend of mine, and then we go way back.
You're supposed to say you were a good coach and I was one of your favorites. You should say that too.
Tony is selling my market for me. I mean, let me bring you in with Liverpool, because a lot of Manchester United, I think you're the second Liverpool fan I'm going to have on this podcast, and you people seem to have a thing for each other. Manchester United fans say they hate Liverpool. Liverpool fans say they hate Manchester United. What is the beef? Is it the number of trophies won? What exactly is going on? Help us understand. Is it that people don't like each other naturally? Or it's just something that is just modern football?
It's gone. It's actually the case of Liverpool and Manchester United has actually gone beyond a check and comparison chart and everything. Mm. It's not just the competition. It's a case of how much devotion, and then this club doesn't just appeal to you in every sense. Mm. It just doesn't appeal to you in every sense due to the fact that I don't want to say, I'd rather say we live in their mind.
They're living in their heads rent free.
Live in their heads. Yes, we live in their heads. So over time, when we do well, they are the first who doesn't support. And of course, we don't even expect them. So you see, it's just gone beyond the. Like, okay, I remember the glory days of Manchester United. You see a typical Manchester United coming out not just to say they are winning the league, they are doing well, they are telling you they are better, they're doing better than Liverpool. And then the questions I ask is, we have 20 teams in the EPL. So why Liverpool as the benchmark? Why Liverpool as the...
Well, they're like something, that. Doing something is Liverpool. Wrong. So
it's gone beyond the competition. It's a mind thing. We always just aspire to. Even at our lowest, we had lowest because we didn't better them. So the times it was Manchester City doing well, but was in the league, everybody was fine. We were competing with ourselves. I'll finish ahead of you. No, leave Manchester United, they're ahead. But me and you, let's just have a little drag. So that was just the case of it's a mind thing. Liverpool fan.
You mentioned the fact that there was a time where it was at its lowest. Liverpool was at its lowest. There was a time Manchester United was at their lowest. No club has ever been at the top always. And that leads us to the issue of errors. That leads us to, you remember in the 1990s and 2000s, it was the Italian clubs that were really, really and they were as hot in Milan, the Juve, the Lazios, the Napoli, the Inter Milan, and all that. Now the Premier League has taken over, and they are being keenly contested with by La Liga and stuff like that. Now, for you, do you think that we have enjoyed the best football as regards maybe football in the 90s and the 2000s? Or do you think that this thing, era by era, that we are still yet to enjoy the best that football can ever offer us in terms of health?
Yes, we are still yet to enjoy the best football can offer. The intensity, the pace keeps getting much more intensified.
Mm.
It's not what it used to be back then. Okay, back then it was a case of a striker doing well. A striker who has 16, 17 goals in a season has done remarkably well. But these days we have physique, everything. It's growing. It's growing. We are yet to get to that era where football will give us ultimate satisfaction. This thing is growing. It keeps coming. In the 90s, nobody will tell you they want to assign a throwing coach. No team will tell you they want three or four coaches to try to help defend and all of those things. But now teams are actually spending more using data analytics to predict
technology,
to predict likely yes and everything. So it's a case of the era keeps growing more and more interesting, and that's why the attraction too is growing. It's not what it used to be. It's not what it used to be, and it's not as it is now. It's not what it's going to be.
Football is on the ascendancy, yes, according to my friend Tolu. By the way, you find him on Twitter. I forgot to sell your market for you at Aluxtia. That's the nickname we got. I know him for back in the day. That's Aluksta at Twitter. You find him on Twitter. And speaking of finding people on Twitter, I have one of the legends, one of the greats in terms of football analysis. But I know they want you, but it is what it is. I'm so happy that we make this. This is a reality. And then I'll let Egbo introduce himself. Because Egbo is one of those people that when you are talking about football in the 2000s, they'll just come with stories of World Cup in the 1980s, and you just have no choice but to just fold your arms and listen and wonder that what happened during these days, what happened then in Sampdoria, in Juventus, with England in 66 and stuff like that. So please, drum roll. Well, this is how we do it on the podcast. You give us your name, sir, the club you support, and the club that you hate the most.
Okay.
You say,
I don't know what to say, but I'm humbled. Honestly, I'm humbled, and I'm sorry we've taken a lot of time. We should have done this a long time ago.
Sure.
But you know now, many things like that. But you know, one particular privilege I have is I get to learn from guys like you, you know, and so many other guys around. That's the truth anyway. And even if it is, you know, with a lot of human beings in quotes on that app, they say there's still an uncountable number of good guys like you, you know, on the app. And the funny thing is, most of us have not met. But, you know, we've kept a very, very strong relationship, and we've continued to oil that relationship. It's just like watching your garden, you know, to make sure that all the fruits and all the shrubs, you know, they continue to blossom well. And we'll take you from there, you know, when it's harvest time. Because I'm Tim Topper, you know, so people come with Topsy-Do, different people, my parents most especially, you know, and other family members. So, you know, I love sports journalism in quotes. That's not what I studied. But, you know, I've been writing since my primary 4. So it's been a long time. And my focus has always been on sports research, history in particular. But over the years, I've shifted to, you know, working on commentary. So you will never see me in the midst of guys. I sit down, feed on the commentaries, feed on the accounts and some of the analysts, because many of them were very good footballers. Andy Townsend, I watched, I want to write just a few stories about the Italian 90. I watched 65% of it, even though I was in primary school, then. And they were very good stories. They still stuck to me until today. And I always want to listen and share it with guys. Football has evolved. Back pass to the keeper. It changed after 90, I think after Italia 90, I think after Euro 90, before USA 94, the whole thing had changed. No back pass to the keeper. Fouling from behind was another major issue, which FIFA had to really work on because, people were getting rough, especially defenders. The defenders we had at home, the defenders of home in the 80s were dying.
They take no sense.
Every man don't even see it. For example, I remember as a small boy, the Nations Cup we had in Morocco, 88, Maroc 88. The semi-finals between Nigeria and Desert Warriors, we used to call them the Fenix. I don't know whether they still call them Fenix, the Algerians. Looking at, man for man, we were equally matched. Peter Rufai was the keeper then, I remember. And we beat them, via penalties, I think 11-10 or 9-8, But in that match, something particular happened. I might be wrong, because a long time, I can't remember some of the details. Bright Omokaro, who was our defender, they call him 10-10 till today. Many people don't know why they call him 10-10. They were bossing us at a point in time, and they had made all their substitutions. And Omokaro looked at it, how can I, tactically edge these people as a tough defender? Picked one of their key guys. I don't know what his name is. I don't know why he's locked up Belumi on one of the key Algerian guys. Took him out. And since they had, I think we had a deficit also. Mm-hmm. And since, they had made all their substitutions, because the injured person had to go. So it became 10. So what happened was he took away their threat. Mm-hmm. I'm just taking you back. Many people know this story. Mm. And we were able to squeeze ourselves till we got a penalty shot. Unfortunately, in the final, we lost to Cameroon. The Emmanuel Koundé goal penalty. And in that match, we scored a legitimate goal. One of the best. We're one of our best footballers. In fact, he was a precocious, highly precocious, intelligent defender. Not too tall. Henry Nwosu scored a goal and it was disallowed. Of course, nowadays it won't happen. There's VAR.
Yeah, technology.
There are extra officials on the sidelines. Mm. So I'm trying to marry what happened in the late 80s, not even in the mid 80s, late 80s, early 90s to what we have now. Mm. Refereeing. Now, that was that. We lost, because we lost the title to Cameroon, our nemesis then. Italia 90. One of the sessions, when the tournament is on, you have some activities in between. Mm. But people focus on the teams, how they are cooling off when they are not playing, their training sessions. But, WADA, you always have WADA doing their jobs, the World Anti-Doping Agencies. Just random tests, they do it. In 2002, they picked on Ronaldinho and a couple of guys. Just pick on them, invite you for testing, take your samples, you get your results. Thereafter, that is one of them. Then some of the other activities we have are the referee reviews. You see, we always have their conferences. They will sit down, analyze everything. Say, you come, we know we are prone to mistakes. Okay, that was not a good call. They look at all the videos, review all those matches. Of course, most of the matches would have been, damned now, because the unfortunate team would have gone home. It would be, the media will report what the deed would have been done, the damage, would have been done. And everything.
Exactly.
And they looked at all those things. And I was like, that was even 1992. Things, 94, they did the same thing. Up to even 98, France 98, the 2002 World Cup, see referees sitting down, they share ideas, and like that. And I looked at it, I said, God, it changed you. 1990 was so crazy because, you know, the tournament itself, so many things happened. I will still talk about it later, but let me, I even jotted it somewhere. Wait, don't go. I'm already writing something. I don't even know where I kept that book. Wow. Okay, it's not here. Wow. You know, but it's changed. The scientific, you know, inclusion came in more like 94. You know, many things, you know, came in. The game changed. You know, Euro 96, France 98, the game moved up to moved a touch higher, and like that. Like, but now we have data science here, which has always been part of us. Data analytics, you can get reviews, you can look at trends, you know, even with data science, okay. I mean, what we experienced in a few games and what must have happened, you know, with particular teams, you know, way back, historical wise, people can merge that. And that's why it's very easy for many of these analysts or heurists or whatever they call them to come and make analysis. This is very good. For example, the betting agencies, I know I used to know of Ladbrokes. I worked in Manchester United for 1.5 years back then. And once you got to Old Trafford, you know, it's an intimidating place, so big. But, you know, as a worker, I was first kiosk assistant, you know, they took me from the 8th floor. I was so angry because there was a boy who was meant to be my supervisor for way younger than me. I knew Chris Maguire, I didn't forget his name, who was helping me because, you know, the till that you see, the point of sale that you see in supermarkets and co, how to, you know, how to work on it, programming. So I was like, okay, while I'm working here, let me learn one or two things from this guy. And he liked me. But later they took me down, it was the 8th floor then, the highest, you know, took me down to floor zero. So floor zero is where you have people coming in. You know, you are coming into the stadium, you know, before you enter from, you know, enter through all the different gates. And, you know, I mean, of course, your ticket is there. Look for where you're going to sit. Find a place. And so we're always there. At that base, you had at different angles Ladbrokes and Betfred. I will give you an example. That's just the little example I need to, and I'm going to give you on this betting, whatever. Because, you know, not all of us are into it. I'm not saying, you know, that's our discussion. But, and I want you to hold on to something. Manchester City, Man United. 4-3. I'm sure everybody still remembers. Oh. That's Michael Owen's goal.
Yeah,
that came in very, very late. Peggy time. The match should have ended at the 94th minute because it was 4 minutes extra. The clock was stopped at the 96th minute. Now, when I got to the stadium with my friend that day, because we had gone to change, it's a general place, you take your pass before you can enter the stadium. You see if you walk out. Then you needed to change, you change to red or black for every worker. There are different departments for those working on match days. You are under the events, banqueting and conferencing. That's the department. So events have to do match days, including league days, FA Cups, the UEFA Champions League days, you know. So after changing. Hello, Tolu. How are you doing?
Tolu's live.
Okay. Hi. Good afternoon. Man, you're taking us way back. When you are being dragged way back, once they pass the age where you won't have sense,
you don't
just listen. You listen.
Hold your hand and pay attention.
Well done.
So I think that's what is still going to join us. So please give us that Manchester United gist, because that game.
Okay, so
I was curious about,
you know, so when I moved in, when, you know, like there's a girl that would normally pass through the security guys, you know, then like a movement like this, you keep moving, you go to your direction, you know, all those corners. I looked at the board, you know, where Ladbrokes. In fact, you know, as a church boy, I hated anything betting. So, you know, then as DNA, what's their problem? But I knew that these guys, you know, these industries were multi-million, you know, industries. I knew it. I mean, those companies, I mean, they were multi-million, you know, pound making, you know, companies. Ladbrokes and Betfair, most especially. And they had their slots in Manchester United. When I looked at the board, first thing, Rooney to score. I can't remember the odds. Maybe 1-0 or 2-0. Cristiano Ronaldo, I think he was still there then, to score. They put it there. Then Tevez, okay, Tevez to score as well. Maybe Tevez to score was maybe 25-1. It was also there. Then, apart from you telling us who the scorer will be and the odds, we'll put the score line also. Like the Rooney was 2-0. Then there was another Rooney to be 2-1. Then there was, I'm not sure whether there was a Craig Bellamy. You know, Craig Bellamy scored 2 in that game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Due to one was a mistake from, Ben Foster at the near post and this and. But on that list, the last one that was there was 4-1 to score. Maybe 1,000-1. Money, I beg you. And you know, the scoreline was 4-3.
Of course.
Now, till today, that was 2008, if I'm not wrong. It's still 6. I still wonder how were these guys able to.
2009. You know, come up 2009.
And they want a whole lot of money. That's just placed a bet of how much. And that was it. You know, so the thing that back then, Maradona was kicked more than 150 times in that World Cup now. What party are they gonna? No, the 1990. No, 86, he was unplayable. 86, he scored 5 goals and 5 assists.
Yeah. Okay, nobody. What are you talking about now? The
1990.
Oh, wow.
Maradona.
Yeah. But you know, by the time the 1990 World Cup started, the team was not in good shape. The World Cup was a very terrible World Cup. But the question is, a team that was in dire straits, a team that was out of form, a team that solely depended on a Messiah, still struggled to get to the final. And a better team that had like 3 or 4 players from the Serie A, Thomas Bethel, Nicolas Odontila, you know, who I think was in Bari or Verona, I'm not sure. Lothar Matthäus was in Inter. Jürgen Klinsmann was in Inter. Rudi Völler was in Roma. And I think one other player was playing in Juve or thereabouts. So, you know, it was home. They were all informed. The Bayern Munich guys, the FC Cologne guys, the Kaiserslautern guys, they were informed. And still, with 9 men in that final, you know, because there were 2 red cards to Argentina, 9 men in that final, it took them a lousy penalty to win the World Cup. That was a terrible Argentine team that squeezed itself to the final.
Hey, hello everyone. I would actually agree that now football is much more enjoyable. And one of the reasons why I would actually say all of the so much attention to details, making it enjoyable, is just down to the fact that people are now paying extreme attention to details, things that are usually overlooked. People are now trying to explore to see how things would work differently. Again, the competitive spirit of football is on the high, and so people actually just want to do the same things. But then, like, what differentiates people in this course is just the slight things they do differently.
The little things that the difference in this game.
What differentiates the typical modern day number 10 is ability to see and reflexly you can actually make a decision. See, for instance, I'll tell someone De Bruyne is my perfect number 10. What he does with the ball on his feet is magic. But trust me, he doesn't stay behind, sometimes he has to play from the holding midfield. We are just imagine the team of Chelsea Mourinho that considered less than they're considered 35, I think 35 goals in a season. Magical. How many teams would? So trust me, all of these things are what makes football even much more enjoyable. And to me,
I would agree that, trust me, we're having as much fun now, but we are not there yet.
Okay, let me take the game pundit view on this one. You mentioned football in the past, football now in the present. Now, do you think that technology, which has been a major game changer, has influenced our minds in such a way that we now have a certain expectation of football? Unlike before, we just want to watch and say, well, whatever. But now we know that a certain illiterate, Atalanta, scores a lot of goals. We expect him to score goals. We know that Chiwebo is always near the top games. We talk about Kevin De Bruyne and assist. We talk about impact. So, as technology when it comes to our expectation about football games in this era?
Okay, thank you. Good question. Let me flip the switch a bit to buttress on what Des mentioned.
Totally if you mean
to what Desmond mentioned, okay, just recently. The one thing that we see, most coaches now, even those we that are viewers of football, one particular thing that is always on our lips is, before any game, is can a tactical formation, tactics, what is he going to play? What is going to be the strategy? Blah, 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 blah. And in your tactical setup, the various components, would play the bigger roles, from your goalkeeper, from the last line of defense to the man who is going to get in the goals, all right? Now, I went back to, you will be surprised that in 1990 is not only my example, but, something just kept pushing me back to finding out, the tactical formation most of these managers used. And for a defender scoring 3 goals in the World Cup back then says a lot of things, because defenders, sit down, here you are. Do your job and leave the midfielders and the strikers to score. But then I saw the flexibility that Franz Beckenbauer used. Argentina also used 3-5-2. The English, which we can, at least many of you guys can relate with, used 3-5-2. So you had the likes of Terry Butcher, Mark Wright behind. Left this guy. He used to call him the psycho. He was former Man City. He played for Nottingham Forest, to Pierce. Oh, he was the left wing back, moving. Then Paul Parker, he's a right-hander now with Eurosport. Paul Parker was the 2 for Manchester United, that guy who used to, supply the crosses. So it was easy then for someone like Paul Gascoigne, Gaza, because he had the supplies coming from the wings, from the so-called left and right backs. In the middle, he had support as well. So, moving, he was the typical number 10 then. So, you just see him move the ball just a few inches after the defensive midfield area, bam, drive through the opponents. The worst the opponent could do, the best thing they could do was to foul him, thereby creating an option for a set piece taker, to take the free kick and bam. Maybe they score from a heading or score from a direct free kick. We used to have that. France 98, when Glenn Hoddle took over, you discover that many people had said that the 2 best England managers left their jobs, or they were relieved of their jobs for non-footballing reasons. Number 1 is Terry Venables, as far as I'm concerned, the Euro 96 manager. Then Glenn Hoddle, beautiful football played. And you can look at, because England did not qualify for USA 94, they were there in 96 at home. The manager, Terry Venables, was able to assemble the Sheringhams, the Shearers and co. And they played a 4-4-2. But then, by 97, when Hoddle came in, Hoddle was taking them through the qualifiers to France 98, they had changed on 2 occasions, they changed their formation to 3 at the back, and it worked. So you just had Paul Scholes was a bit free, even though Paul Scholes, being a shy person naturally, still shied away from moving forward like you see the Ozils do, the Coutinhos do, or the Kevin De Bruyne's, the way they do. you still see him sitting with the midfielders, with the Paulins and Co. So again, all these tactical formations or setups, they've always been. The only thing that I know must have that must have impacted positively on, you know, football itself, it's, you know, the training methods are different, the technology is different, you are, the boots are different now. For example, in tennis, which I'm even much stronger in tennis than in football. The 1997 final between Gustavo Kuerten and Sergio Bruguera. If you watch the final again on clay, you'll be running boom, boom, like Paco. You know, the racket sounding, the audio was so sharp, even though, you know, technology wasn't even as advanced as it was, even till we have now, but that was 23 years ago. But now, those graphite rackets, nobody uses them. Roger Federer, who has been my fan from day one, from maybe age 17 or age 16, refused, you know, maybe out of, you know, sheer, a bit of arrogance, refused to change his racket. And by the time it caught up on him that Rafa Nadal was already overtaking him and Djokovic was already in the mix, he had to switch. And he did that switch less than about 4 or 5 years ago. Technology has overtaken the old Wilson racket you're using. People made a lot of noise about it. But when he knew that he had to, you know, he had to tweak his backhand, and how do you tweak your backhand? How do you add more venom to your forehand? It's a racket. So you change it. Again, football, the material itself is also part of it. It has changed. Remember the Rotario Adidas that they used in Euro 2004? You know, it was tested. The likes of Beckham, all of them tested it, and they felt good about it. The ball that was used in South Africa, I've forgotten the name, was a problem. You know, the flight. I'm even surprised that
they had one crazy name for the ball like this. I'm trying to remember.
Very funny name like
Jabulani,
this.
Jabulani, yes.
Yeah, ball.
Blow ball.
You know, so, you know,
I confuse everybody.
Like Nigeria, Argentina, I was just like, okay, I know, but we will give a good fight. But with this ball, how are we going to be able to cope? Knowing fully well that they could use a set piece. You know, in 94, Argentina edged us, you know, with a set piece. There was a free kick that Rufai spilled, that Kaniga scored a rebound in 2002. It was a Gabriel Batistuta's goal
at the corner kick. Post.
I think Isaac Okoronkwo left him, you know, and that was it. In 2010, it was a Gabriel Heinz set piece again. You know, so I sat down, these guys, again, with this kind of yearbook, set piece is coming on. You know, and then I know, knowing fully well that we were always suspect to, you know, set pieces like that. Even 2014, during what's it called? During Keshi's time, they had a corner that they scored from a game. Another
oh, yeah. That controversial game.
You know, yes, now. I mean, we've been there, Cinderella now, so for a long time. But back to what we are saying. So we've talked about the technology, you know, the training methods are different. Guys watch videos now, they analyze things, you know, even from the virtuals, such as just like the same way you see virtual games, you know, they are not real. Guys play a lot of games now, they can simulate ideas on their own. That, okay, if I get on the pitch, if I make this move, although it's not real, you know, that means something possible. Can, you know, it just gives them the opportunity to think of very, very funny things. I'm sure that Cristiano Ronaldo has enjoyed technology, apart from his skills, you know, and his ability. What has made him do many, many things and to be able to tweak his game from the typical frustrating winger to a world beater was not just Sir Alex alone now. Molding him, you know, it was general, him sitting there looking at, okay, how can the technology work for him? Yes, now It's very, very deep. As it's affecting footballers positively, it's affecting the referees. Because they are your physical eyes cannot do the job alone. Even the the linesman can, in a state of euphoria, lose himself. Because behind him are, for example, in Anfield, that's the only regret I have while in England that I did not go to. I went to Liverpool twice, but I wasn't able to arrive for a training, but I wasn't able to. I wanted to attend, you know, one of the matches. Because I had one bros that would tell me that Anfield under 45,000, for God's sake, but the noise that came from Anfield would deafen the ears of those who even came with those who came with 60,000 fans. It was so intimidating. So you see how Gerrard will come lift a Liverpool team from the dead. It was something. It was something. The noise, you know, the everything. So tell me, linesman has a lot of people crossing at him. You know, maybe he had made a mistake, maybe just about 5 minutes before, crossing at him. So before he even raises up the flag, he's scared. Number two, they may hailing insults, then even charging him to, you guys do it for us, man. You know, do it or don't make mistakes. You know, the intimidation is there. So it's easy for them to make mistakes. Sure, you understand. But like in tennis now, that we've had all kind of technology over 5-6 years now. All those errors, you don't go. You can imagine many disputable calls because the umpire is seated, he cannot see everything. But there's no replay. You just allow it go. And you see the person who is the player who is not even meant to lose, you know, would lose. Because maybe he was sure that, and he said that thing touched the line. It was an inball. After maybe once the umpire rules and the line judge also rules that he's out and he's out, the end of the day, he will go back to the game, he will lose focus, he might not even be in the game, lose the game, and the end is, whatever you see is history. So we are moving on now. From technology is really, really helping us, especially on the virtual side. Then goalkeeping. Sorry, I want to chip in before that stuff. Do you know this keeper called Rene Higuita? He was a former Colombian keeper.
He had
this very long hair.
He's
popular for the scorpion kick.
His video scorpion kick.
I think it was against Colombia Brazil, if I'm not wrong, in 93 or 95. I'm not sure. Take time. I just implore you guys in your free time. Maybe you can YouTube Rene Higuita. You will see that the antics of the likes of Alisson Becker, Ederson, Victor Valdez, then with Barcelona, if you want to Manuel Neuer, move the ball out. He never
pass sweeper.
Sweeper keeper. All these things are not new. You see, the funny thing is, all these so-called analysts that we have now, they played during those times. They were the late 80s guys, and the early 90s, mid-90s guys. They saw all these things. They play with these guys, and they pretend as if it never happened, or they never saw it. Higuita will leave his. Unfortunately, the time, you know, what happened to Andres Escobar after that own goal against the United States? Just on goal, nothing. The guy did not commit any other crime. Rene Higuita did times 10 of it in 1990. They gave him a pass. He left his post. He was very close to the halfway line, you know. Of course, the defender that passed to him during the extra time gave him a bad pass. But he had the option of, you know, clearing the ball. But he took the ball in, wanted to dribble Roger Miller. Jamila just stuck his foot in front, ball away, ran, you know, how many meters? About 40 meters to the post, and that was it. This was the second round of a tournament. Second round, quarterfinal was just in front of them, and there was the belief that Colombia will beat this Cameroon, because the last game of Cameroon beat Argentina, it was a shock. If I cried that day, I won't lie. It was a shock. they picked up 2 points. In 1990, points were two. That's why I say a lot has changed. But by the time we got to USA 94, points now became 3 points per game. Then it was two. Second game against Romania, Cameroon won. So Cameroon had already won their first two games. They qualified. The last game was against Russia, which was a 4-0 bashing. So, now looking at that game and Colombia qualifying in their own group as best losers, they saw that Cameroon lay away Russia. Forget maybe the Argentina game again. Argentina, our South Africa, South American neighbors, that one a fluke. Maybe Russia beats them 4-0. And they used many of the guys in the first 11. And so I think they went into that game thinking that, oh, we can do something. The first goal of Rojamila, because there was no goal, the goals came in the extra time, was the mistake from this keeper again, leaving his post, and it was easy for Miller to connect to their post. Until he made that glorious error, coming to leaving his post to dribble. But if you look at the guy, he still continued to do shit. It was years after he did the scorpion kick. He would juggle the ball, head to the ball, keep moving, go to. It's always been. So you discover that the likes of Freddy Rincon, the Carlos Valderrama, the midfielders who were expecting the ball, will leave him to move the ball. So they won't just do any wala. Once he moves the ball, he takes away a few of the opposing players because someone will be chasing him to take the ball from him. He was also a sweeper keeper.
First X Minutes podcast, ladies and gentlemen. You've heard a bit of history. The famous guy on this podcast doesn't call me Papi the Great. He calls me something else. He would call me that later in this podcast. I'm very sure of that. But on Twitter, you find me at Papi _ the Great. It's big win. PAPI_the Great. And of course, I have to say, I'm a friend, very good friend, Liverpool fan. If you don't want to watch Tony, you know where to find this guy. His name is Tony. You find him on Twitter at Alex Tia. That's ALUKSTEA. Alex Tia. ALUKSTEA. We're talking about the journey of. Good to have you, Tony. Let's touch on, before we go back in the days, there's something about your club, the news. Touch about Liverpool. Everybody is arguing. Liverpool is, as much as they try not to be in the spotlight, they always effortlessly just find themselves in the spotlight. I mean, everybody's talking about the Premier League, JJL, and everybody's talking about Liverpool. Should we give them the title? Should we not give them the title? This, that, and not. Should we end the league? And all of that. So it's like Liverpool is just sitting on their own JJL, looking at everybody, saying, hey, what do you do to deserve all of this? So I want to ask you now, for you, what's your take? What's your opinion on let's even separate Liverpool from the whole thing now. This is football versus life. Lives are dying, people are contracting this disease and all of that. And UEFA comes out to say, okay, Premier League, we give you this ultimatum for you to resume the league, which is May 25. Now, what's your take on the whole idea of the league being finished, the league being done, let's finish this league, let's play it, what we are doing, like, indoors, you know,
okay.
Without space, what's your take?
Okay, however I try to put this, my sound bias to those who don't see reasoning from the past where I would come from. But then, I've had this discussion, okay, let me just do what I said I was going to do before I even get engrossed with this discussion. Kochi, I'll always call you.
I said it.
Okay. I had this discussion with a mate. And then I said, what I told him was, I don't want to believe it's football versus life. It is life versus life. Football itself is life. It is life versus life. But of course, our well-being, our being able to breathe, being able to respire, it's the real, real life. But it is life versus life. You don't know what this thing means to plenty of us. It's not just the game. It's not just the 11 men chasing balls. Some people get to see that. Some of us get to see some of these things. This is the only way we'll distress. This is tradition for us. This is what really makes us. We have a bad day. The next thing is we want to watch Liverpool and something. So it is life versus life. As much as we want life to continue. And one of the, I read the mail, the the German Football Federation was able to propose to the government as to resumption of the league. And what they told them was, this thing would help people relax, would help people get over this current
focus on something else.
If people are able to watch their team play from the comfort of their homes, and then man, maybe it relaxes this old pressure. And then people can actually live like they really should live. So it is us making life work for this life. And another thing I tell people is, irrespective of what Liverpool is going through, irrespective of what happens to Liverpool, Liverpool will always be in the spotlight.
True.
Liverpool will always be in the spotlight. It's either Liverpool is this, it's either Liverpool is not this, and everything. Oh, fine. I had a very bad record against Atletico Madrid. It's always been. I think over 10, 12 years now, I've not knocked them out. No, 15 years, I've not knocked them out in the knockout stage of the Champions League every time we met. They've always trashed me. If it wasn't for the league's sake, trust me, that might have been an agenda why Liverpool would be in the news. Liverpool always is in the news. It's always. So, but then again, for the Liverpool to be crowned Premier League, of course, nobody should be unfair here. We've waited 30 years for this moment. Now we're here.
We've done enough.
We've waited this long and we've done enough. So what else? Come on.
I'm with you. I read
Sean Wright Phillips proposing that we have a head start next season. What makes you think there's going to be a next season?
Calm down now.
Yes. No. What I mean is next season can be next 2 years.
Next year, true. With everything ravaging and all that, true.
Yes. So of course there will be a next season. But then why don't
nobody let's talk knows when it's coming?
Why not discuss how to reach an amiable resolution to this current one than talking of next season.
Next season.
Give me a start. What happens if you give me a start next week? Next season? Does it mean other teams can't come from anywhere and surpass that?
I like your point on it is life versus life, because some people their daily bread is connected to being ball boys, being match attendants, not even necessarily action on the pitch. They are the guys indoors, they are the security officers, they are the administrators or whatever, and they are
stewards,
exactly. They are connected, strongly connected to everything that is happening in football. But then again, you know, some people come and they bring the argument of there's a possibility. Now, the German, of course, you know, I'm sure you would have read it. The German government says, okay, you know what? German Bundesliga, chill a bit. Your proposed May 9th resumption may not be feasible. So they postponed it to maybe May 16 or May 23 because there's fear of the spread of coronavirus and all of that. But I want to ask you now, you strongly support that football resumption is good for the sanity of some people, and of course to add more life to the quality of life that is already existing or that we are finding ourselves in. Now, don't you think that the spread of the coronavirus is likely to be faster with the resumption of football action on the pitch?
Yes, I would agree to that, that there's every likelihood of it spreading faster. But then let's look at this point. The German FA has said leagues should be played behind closed doors. Leagues should be played behind closed doors. I actually think that solves it. Fans can watch their team play from home, and then whatsoever jubilation, everybody becomes an equal fan. There are no ticket holders, no anything. Everybody gets to see their team play from the comfort of their room and all of these things. So I actually think that the spread there can be minimized that way. If all of the players who would get on the pitch, the officiating, the match officials are tested, and then they're negative. So then it's minimal. It's almost impossible for anything to spread. What doesn't exist wouldn't spread.
That's just what
I think. So if they are tested negative and then it's going to be played behind closed doors, no, I think we're fine. I think we're fine.
Yeah, being played behind closed doors, you mean that people or most of the active participants will be fine. However, the news did not break behind closed doors, and those involved are not fine with it. I'm talking about the news that came out recently that the U.S. women's football team shocked and disappointed by the dismissal of their equal pay court thing and all. Everybody has been running from this. I'm not talking about this topic. I know you. Don't let me down. It's a big deal. Now, what is it with women, the U.S. women national team, asking for equal pay with the men's national team? Because if we look at it in a larger context, and we say, okay, what the judge did was unfair, it shouldn't have dismissed their case. Did they actually have a case in the first place? Like, we're not trying to be patriarchal here or something. We're not trying to be maybe gender biased or something. But women's football and men's football, is there a case?
I would want to agree there was there was a case like no case. I would say there was a case like no case.
In the sense that
they wanted it. But if we'll be realistic, it wasn't going to happen. It wasn't possible. Mm. If we'll be realistic. TV rights, attention, all of the sponsorship and everything. No, it doesn't align.
Mm.
It doesn't align. So where would the equal pay be coming from?
Mm.
You want clubs to run at the loss? I think what would have the equal pay wasn't going to work, but I think what they probably would have gotten was perhaps even much more, a little much more incentives and much more recognition.
Mm.
Trust me, there is nowhere in the world where it should have held, where that such case would have held waters. Mm. Not even in Brazil, where they are strong, or maybe the Asian countries where they actually have very good female footballers. It wouldn't hold water anywhere. It has been and it will always be.
Mm. Okay.
It will always be. I will.
Okay. Are you still making your point?
No. It's fine. I was just going to say, however much they tried to put it, it was just perhaps they could get much more recognition and then a little more incentive. That's just
okay. Great. So the game pundit on Twitter, the game pundit, THEGAMEPUNDIT, joins us on this podcast. Good to have you, sir. I want to bring you in on the last topic that we discussed about. I've seen something juicy. Oh, by the way, we have just limited time for this edition of the recording because of the minutes allocated to us as regards the account we are using. So we'd just like to make replies as short as possible so that we can cover a whole lot of stuff. So I'm sure you've read the news, sir, as regards the U.S. Women's national team, the judge dismissing their case and all of that. What do you think? Do you think the judge was unfair? Do you think the women's national team have a right or a case in the discussion of equal pay between the U.S. women's national team and the men's national team?
Honestly, it's a double-edged sword that I know. Rapinoe, is it Megan Rapinoe? What's her full name? Seems to be the heroine now, trying to pull the stunts and pull the strings. I like what she's been doing for a while. I thought that's just her personality. Anyway, let's have equal rights, equal pay, equal allowances, blah 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 blah. That's just basically the summary of the whole thing. Mm. One thing she and many of us need to understand is it's not the first time. We might not have it blown out as we have now.
Mm.
Because the same U.S. national team, we've had legends like Mitchell Akers. Hmm? Ami Wambach came in years after Mitchell Akers came. They're legendary in their own ways. But none of them were, or none of them was, able to, come up with something and say, okay, I'm fighting. It does not mean that they did not work maybe on the ground. Mm. That's why I'm saying that Rapinoe's case, I like the fact that yes, she's more of a social critic now, you know, and then she has all her comrades, you know, trying to back
her support her.
But it's not new. It's not a new thing. Now the next question might be, is the case worth being fought for? That's why I said it's a two-edged sword. It is for or against. And I still stand in between because you cannot, the same thing. Let me flip the switch. What we have in football now, maybe because women football is not too pronounced. I remember I started with the World Cup in 1991 when we were called the Mama Eagles. And I've seen, you know, the World Cups and all the other tournaments, you know, I've seen the transitions even to the present 2020. So, you know, I can say that, you know, even with the efforts of FIFA and everything, women football is still not as pronounced as men football. And that's where you see the men standing. We train harder, we're stronger, we have more injuries, our schedule is more, we should have more pay. Same thing in tennis. I said I was going to flip the switch. Billie Jean King is a legend. Even if you've not, you don't follow tennis, at least you've heard that name before. She's been fighting for God knows how many years now. She's very old now. And, you know, they kick it aside. The WT, that's the Women's Tennis Association, will make some noise about it. They try to push it. The ATP will say their own. Everybody will keep quiet. They push it, but it's still on the front burner. And the discourse has always been, you cannot compare men's sports, even if it's the same sport, maybe it's you do the same athletics, the effort and what goes on, you cannot compare it to the women's. The women will not agree. And KKB is the same ball with a kick, it's the same tennis ball, it's the same racket.
But it's more complicated.
But it's more complicated because of, you know, our physiological characteristics, the way we were built from inside, our physical, you know, makeup as humans. A man would exert more pressure than a woman. You can't bring even Serena, who is likely, she's old now, but she's likely the strongest of every other girl on tour. You can't say, okay, Serena, come and play a, let me look for a boy in the challenger circuit.
The German, very young German, Zverev.
I'm not even going to Zverev. Zverev is going to crush her. I'm not moving. Don't even move near the eight. I'm not, look for a player that is maybe 782 in the world. And each
I guess. So I should not mention Kevin Anderson then.
No, Kevin, I'm a bad guy. You know, again, it was the, why I'm using the analogies, you must be have a balance. Forget the ranking. The guy is a guy. He's gone through the races, he's gone through the same training, the hard knocks to be where he is, even though he's down the ranking and, you know, he's a bloody outsider. But the fact remains that even the strongest woman cannot handle the weakest man on top.
Okay.
Years ago, something happened. Before I forget, sorry. There was an American player, Jonathan Stark, one of these bolo, very average players there. Jonathan Stark, I think I remember in the mid-90s, mid-1996, 1997, 1998, or there about late 90s, who, you know, had a contest with, I don't know whether it was Serena, was with another top tennis player. And the lady beat him. People came to watch. He was well organized. Just one game, you know, and she beat him. Then you will know that I'm sure the guy, even though the guy we knew then was an average player playing a top lady, I'm sure he didn't put in a lot of effort. You know, just they do like Obirene, you know, that kind of a thing. You know, don't let me put too much so that I don't break her down physically or don't stress her. So, you know, the talk, everything. We've been having this talk over 10 years ago. It will continue to be. And I'm not surprised that they dismissed that case. I've not read the full transcript, but I'm not surprised. Because there's you don't have much, you know, the case doesn't have much merit, you know, to really push that, okay, it must be for. No, the sponsors won't think that way. You think they just come to play football, enjoy themselves, and the fans will pay money, clap for them, they go home. The sponsors won't think that way. The kit manufacturers won't think that way. The FA, sponsoring, and I mean, at least I'm putting some coins and some cash in the respective associations. Won't think that way. I know it's not commercially viable as far as you are concerned. That is where the point is. You might think it's are we talking about, are we bringing patriarchy again? There are men, okay, oh, the role of men, oh, must women must be subjugated. No, I don't think so, because football has passed that one, you know. So I don't think it's a gender thing. Gender thing does not work in football. It can work in entertainment, work in the movies, work in fashion and all those, but football, nah, not really. So that's my take on that, you know?
First X Minutes podcast. I have the game pundit with me on Twitter, and also have Tolu on Twitter. Liverpool fan, Alex Dia, ALUKSTEA. Or the game pundit is spelled the game pundit. So in case you're having issues spelling that, that's THEGAMEPUNDIT. Speaking of IT, Italia. Something came to my mind. I saw something on the web via footballitalia.com. Let me confirm, footballitalia.net, and then we have to deal with how Italian football in the 90s and all of that. Tolu, let me start with you. Most of us are young, in quotes, but we read up just to beef up our knowledge of the game. Now, from everything you read about, let me be specific about 90s. Everything you read about football in the 90s, the days of Zidane, the days of Ray, I realized that the 90s gave us Zidane, the 90s gave us Ronaldo, the 90s gave us Raul, the 90s Figo. Gave us Figo, the 90s gave us those golden generations that anytime we now want to rate GOAT, the greatest of all time, we seem to cap everything from the 90s to the 2020s, and we just pick somebody from that era. Now, is it that era that defined the peak? I know we spoke about peak last week, but can we say that is there more to come because of technology? Are players going to get better? Goals calling record still going to be shattered? I mean, can anybody surpass Messi's 91 in the season? Maybe Mbappe, maybe this guy in Borussia Dortmund, what's his name, teenager, I forgot his name, Haaland, exactly. Will technology help players surpass what this great did in the 90s and in 2000s?
The as much as I would say football has so evolved, football has been transformed. There's actually a very higher chances that technology helped, but trust me, it's going to be very, very difficult to come close to what those guys did. Those guys had the sheer talent, and then it's not as what it used to be. Most people now will tell you Messi and Ronaldo, blah blah blah. But trust me, there was a certain Ronaldinho that did everything possible with this football. He did virtually everything possible with the football. He made some of us like, of course, nobody hated Ronaldinho. He made football even much more beautiful. So even as beautiful as he made football, then he probably didn't score as much as Messi did, and he didn't even get as much hype as Messi, just because Messi has won more and Messi has been able to break plenty records. But I actually think the peak and that enthusiasm, trust me, has been left behind. Now technology is making goalkeepers concentrate, trying to do more, so much more. But then we had keepers then, like the Colombian. The game pundit mentioned last week, Higuita. Yeah, so of course he was a joy to behold. You know, you want to see him grab the ball and then see what he's going to do with it and everything. But now we have Anderson and Alisson, and then you're like, wow, they are ball passers, and they are ball passers. And then you want to see, and then you talk of De Gea. It has good reflex distribution and all of those things. So I think the peak of talent and enthusiasm, it's just more of data now, how data can be reformed, and how technology can help. That's what, but of course, football is here to stay, and there's even much more enjoyment for us to grab.
I want to bring the game point in. What happened to Italian club football? I think that's just the way I can ask the question. From the highs in the 90s to Juventus now running the show.
You know the funny thing? I said I was going to tell you this today. I watched a three-minute clip on Napoli versus Milan. It was a league game, 1-1. The array of talent in that lineup. Oh boy. Maradona equal, I think. Okay, Maradona scored first for Napoli, then this guy equalized, Rudolph. Now, you're looking at an Italian side that, if you look at the article I wrote then, you know, prior to the 89-90 season, Napoli just won the league then. And why Maradona himself carried that team. The team was an average, relatively average team, but carried and dragged a team of that nature to the league title. They won the league just by 2 points. But you had a Milan that had a Franco Baresi, Alessandro Costa Cotta, that had, you know, Tassotti still there. They had the Dutch trio, Marco van Basten, Ruud Gullit, and Frank Rijkaard. Then you have one of the best wingers of the 90s, of the late 80s, 90s. Highly creative. That's Roberto Donadoni. Then Albertini came in later. Massaro was also amongst them. Because if you look at Massaro, yeah, in-out, even though he was invited to the World Cup, to join the World Cup squad in 82, we didn't see much of him until USA 94, when he was around 34 years old. So the Serie A has always been, you know, that hub of talent. You ask me, I don't know. Why? People will say, why? Okay, why don't go on? Why is it like that? I'll tell them I don't know. Maybe not because they had all the technically gifted, managers there. Even if you look at it very well, you only heard of maybe Giovanni Trapattoni, Arrigo Sacchi, then Maldini, Paolo Maldini's father, Cesare Maldini, and Fabio Capello was even much younger then, also coming in to take over. But we had these players. The South Americans, they knew that once I'm able to escape from poverty, you know, from the maybe the corridors of Florianapolis, or I leave my Sao Paulo neighborhood, I'm going to find my way in either Cremonese or Bari or Perugia. That is it. So, looking at the success of Parma, for example, AC Parmalat, you know, a very well-run company that had, at a point in time, had in the 94-95, they had won a lot of trophies, UEFA Cup winners, Turam was there, Sebastian Veron was there, Alan Bogosian was there, you had Dino Baggio, you had Roberto Sensini. So you're looking at players from Argentina. Bogosian was the core of the French national team that failed to qualify for USA 94 when Cantona and Ginola were there. You know, but he was retained after some players were cut off. You know, and he finally made the France 98 squad. He was part of the Henri Trezeguet squad. You know, but, you know, he kept his form then because he was in Parma. I forgot the name of that their manager, because immediately they made a lot of money. Crespo came in, you know, from Argentina, also increased the stakes. So there was a lot of money coming in, but they mismanaged those funds. They sold Turam. Turam was sold for around $32 million to Juve. Forget that Gianluigi Buffon was a Parma boy. Buffon was sold for $40 million to Juve. So you look at 32, 40. Veron was sold from Parma to SS Lazio. They made a lot of money. Crespo was sold as well. You know, like that. They kept moving. There are some other players I cannot remember. When I look at that, their back three and how they reshaped this particular Italian striker. But they could not manage all these things. They wasted the management, wasted the money. And that was the same thing happened to Lazio. You know, they brought in Sven Goran Eriksson, and luckily he won the league for them, I think, in 2000. That was what made Eriksson popular, because who knew that you know, man, from nobody knew him from anywhere. The same Lazio bought many of these guys. Had Simone Inzaghi, you know, now had Veron, had Matias Almeida, you know, had, Roberto Fabian Ayala. So many of them coming into Lazio. Lazio also became a hub. Then the Juves, the Milans were also well run. But when the management started looking outside, I knew there was going to be a problem. Started to liaise and started to, you know, dabble into on Savory acts. You know, it was just, you know, a matter of time that we were going to have an implosion. And that's where we had a taste of the Calciopoli scandal. You know, that, you know, Juve had to be demoted. Milan was very lucky.